Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio SGN. I am one of your humble hosts, Lindsay Anderson is with me. The fuck just happened? God, I'm getting over a cold or some shit. I've had a rough... My name's A.V. Eichenbaum. Hi. Hello. Pronouns they, them. You know what I haven't done this season? I haven't introduced the show, actually. So if this is your first time joining us, this is the one and only podcast for Seattle's premier LGBTQ plus weekly newspaper. Anyway, I'm exhausted, and Lindsay's here. Hi. Hello.
Hello. Hi. I'm also here.
God, it's been a heavy, heavy week. We have the Tortuguita murder and the protests with that, and then Tyre Nichols. There was a protest with that over the weekend, and I was there very briefly with some reporters. We're going to actually see more of that in this week's upcoming paper. But I wanted to check in with you. How are you doing, Lindsay?
You know, as much as the world feels like it's constantly spinning more towards chaos, we've got sunshine today. So it's kind of a balance a little bit. And I'm taking that as kind of the highlight of my morning so far. I can see the mountains from my window and it's putting me in a good mood.
That's right, Seattle. The mountain's out and we're here on this beautiful Monday morning. On the bright side, it is bright out and that does generally improve the mood of Seattleites. Some good news about the Tyre Nichols protest. It did not turn violent. And his mother even came out and was like, hey, I want justice. Please don't endanger yourself or others, basically, was the gist of it, which was nice. In stark contrast to the Tortuguita post-vigil riots of Atlanta and the vigils that have been held sort of around the country for them. All that and more can be read in our newspaper this week and next. So go ahead and do that. I get really worked up talking about it. I'm furious enough as it is, but we're going to try to take a little bit of a lighter spin. We're going to try to find that sunshine in all that gray. But before we do that, Lindsay, I want to revisit a segment that we haven't done in a while. Pop Culture Corner. What are you reading these days? What are you up to? What are you watching?
If you are interested in what I am reading these days, you can check out SGN Book Club or read my weekly author interviews, because that's all I'm reading is the books that these people I'm interviewing have made. And right now I'm kind of on a track of queer rom-com novels, which is super fun. It's like only eating icing for dinner if you are going to compare reading to eating, I guess. I do definitely feel like I need some substance back into my bookshelf. I have a whole stack of books that I am needing to read as soon as I get a break from the rest of the books I'm reading. But as far as watching goes, I have been binging this indie little queer TV show that probably not a lot of people have heard about called Modern Family.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
It's super fun. I've been having a lot of fun this last year or two binging shows that were on before I was old enough to watch them. Like, they felt like adult shows, and I was, like, the age of, like, the little kids in Modern Family. I think I'm a little younger than Manny and Luke. It's just been fun. It's a lot of nostalgia to see the 2012s fashion. Also, it has not aged well, some of the jokes in that show.
Sure.
It's still hilarious, but I'm like cringing every other joke because it's a bit homophobic, a bit racist. Isabel and me have been brainstorming what like a 2023 Modern Family would look like, because they were being so progressive with their white cis gay couple. I think that today's Modern Family would be like a non-binary person of color. There would be no straight people in this Modern Family. There are no blood relations. That's what I think we need.
They do need that straight person to play, like, the quote-unquote everyman, right? As much as we hate Phil, this is a Phil-hating household. You need Phil so that the queers have someone to laugh at without getting offended, and also so that the straight dads have someone to relate to and can laugh at themselves, right?
Yeah, I do hate Phil.
Why is he always trying to touch Gloria?
And they're all like, this is so funny. I'm like, what? What is funny about this husband that wants to cheat on his wife all the time? Straight people, I just...
She deserves better. He's just a dumbass. Anyway, I'm reading stuff as well. I read two books in the last 2 weeks. Sleeping, who needs it, right? So In my spare time, I read Consumia's Spiritual Emporium, which is a novel about sort of a wholesale spirituality emporium set in Los Angeles that has an app called the Omnist that assigns you your own gods. I will say it's about 400 pages long, and the first 200 pages are just set up. The basics of the plot are like Consumia, who goes by Connie, is a woman who's going through a pretty bad divorce and used to be a real estate agent, and now she sells like witchy crap, right? And she doesn't really believe in it, but a lot of her employees do, and she is dealing with her business and whether or not it's going to survive and her messy divorce and her shitty ex-husband, right? And then the other plot there is a sort of shitty guy in his late 20s who is trying to interpret whether or not his neighbor wants to hang out with him. And he's an archaeologist and he finds a magic guitar at this shop that is maybe made of teeth. I don't know. Anyway, what I read in a lot of the negative reviews is that people didn't care past the first 100 pages about the plot. And I was almost there, but I just kind of stuck with it, and it was worth it at the end of the day. Like, the back half of the book, super, super good and really interesting. The premise itself is really interesting, like having an app assign you gods to worship, sort of like people do astrology. It was really cool. And the other book I read, on my third try, finally, I picked it up and put it down so many times over the years because my mental health is just not there for it. But House of Leaves is a postmodern horror novel. Partially, it's like an academic essay on a documentary about a house that's bigger on the inside that doesn't exist, maybe. And that part is written with footnotes and references and analysis. And then also it's the story of a young man who's also living in Los Angeles in the late 90s, who's like losing his mind because he found this manuscript by a blind man about this documentary that may or may not exist. And also it's written as though it's a labyrinth sometimes. Sometimes you have to turn the book upside down or like read it in a spiral. And it's really good. It took me a really long time to get through. I got halfway through it in the pandemic and then I had to put it down because I'd already tried reading it a year before that, and I restarted it when I had extra time in 2020, right? It does literal psychic damage to you. It's some wizard shit. It's not for the faint of heart, and it's not for people who don't like to read hefty tomes, right? Because just the experience of reading it is very frustrating sometimes, and the plot itself is exhausting. Anyway, if you liked Homestuck and hate yourself, read House of Leaves. It's really good. And I just found out that there's a companion album by an artist that I really liked also in high school named Poe, who is the author's sister. And she wrote and performed an album called Haunted, which I was listening to earlier today, that has thematic tie-ins to House of Leaves, which, fun fact, was originally the first edition was passed around on the internet and printed out and handed out in LA because it was like 1998 or 1999 or something. And so it was read in chunks in person and Xeroxed and passed around the country before it was actually put into a novel, which I also think is really cool.
That is so cool. That's like the great novels, you know? It's a modern classic.
Yeah, I would argue it is kind of like the 90s version of Ulysses.
The Odyssey?
No. It's by James Joyce. It's another postmodern thing. I hated it. I couldn't get through it. You know, postmodern novels are hit and miss. Like, I'm a big fan of Italo Calvino. So, anyway, we've got a great interview coming up for you with a present-day author, and it really is a delight. And we'll have all that and more after the break. Support for Radio SGN comes from Book It Repertory Theater, presenting The Murder of Roger Ackroyd. Gossip, blackmail, deception, and betrayal unsettle a peaceful English village. After a pair of mysterious deaths, infamous detective Hercule Poirot is pulled out of retirement to solve the case. Join us at this world premiere of one of Agatha Christie's most innovative and mind-bending mysteries. For tickets, visit bookit.org. That's bookit.org.
Hi, this is Dr. V. Hill with V. Hill Family Medicine. Ever wish your doctor knew you by name, understood where you were coming from, and listened to your unique health concerns and worries? I have built just such a practice where the focus is on you and the care delivered is in line with your values and ideals. Learn more about affirming primary care at VHIL Family Medicine. Visit VIGILMD.com or call 253-693-0071.
Seattle Public Theater proudly presents This Bitter Earth, the story of love challenged by political reality. Experience the life and reality of Jesse, a thoughtful Black playwright, and his boyfriend Neil, a white Black Lives Matter activist, as they navigate their life together. As passions and priorities collide, this couple is forced to reckon with issues of race, class, and the bravery it takes to love out loud. Directed by Brandon Ivy, This Bitter Earth runs January 27th through February 19th at Seattle Public Theater. Tickets and information available at seattlepublictheater.org.
Gotta do the self-care.
How are you? Still a little low?
Well, therapy's been good, but it might be smart to lock up the oxy from your surgery.
Are you worried?
Well, I know not to take medication that's not mine, but I don't want to have it around on a hard day.
I'll lock it up.
That's very caring.
That's me, self-caring for everyone.
Protect the ones you love from opioid misuse. Lock up your medication.
Joining me today via Zoom is an award-winning American poet and novelist, a writer, you've done so much. You've done so much in your career, and I'm kind of freaking out a little bit at having you on the show. I'm kind of a nerd about most things. I'm really appreciative of you being here. Before I gush too much, Ben Science is here on the show. Hello. Welcome to Radio SGN. How are you?
I'm fine. I would sing Adele's Hello if I could sing. The other way, I sing my songs through my writing. That's my voice. I learned to play the guitar when I was young. And, I could play the guitar. I could start playing the guitar. But I couldn't sing. So I said, well, screw this. I want to sing and play the guitar. And so I needed to be good at what I did. And I had no talents. And you can be good at what you do only if you have something inside you that's there to tap into. Otherwise, you can't do it. And I was always a really good writer. I mean, I could just write. I don't know why. When I was a junior in high school, our teachers had us write a short story. And she told me, I want to see you after class. And I thought, oh, shit. You know, I had a lot of cussing in there. Like, you're going to go after me. And she didn't do that at all. She said, Benjamin? Everybody called me Benny then, but she said, Benjamin, where'd you learn how to write? And I said, I don't know. I didn't know. I just could do it. I mean, I could just do it. I always could do it, which made it, because it was so kind of second nature to me. It was hard for me to be a teacher at first because I didn't need to be taught. It amazed me when I taught creative writing that students couldn't write dialogue in their stories. Easiest damn thing to do in the world. You know, I was like, at the time I was like in my 40s and I was 40 something and teaching. And I thought I can do their voice, a voice of a 20-year-old better than they can. And I think the thing is, it's about listening. It's about listening and reproducing what you hear.
I always find that I'm having constant conversations with different versions of myself in my own head. And so when you write that, you know, that's kind of, I don't know, it's a lot of fun having those conversations kind of unfold on paper.
You know? I tend to speak more formally, but all of us speak informally, even those that speak more formally. Nobody says, I'm going to the store. They're going to say, I'm going to go to the store. Or right, going to go. Because that's how we all talk. Mm-hmm. And it sounds more natural. And sometimes you can't reproduce exactly, but if your character says, and shit, well, just do it a couple of times at the end of because it doesn't mean anything. They just say, I went to the store and shit. It doesn't mean anything. You just add it on. Right. That's how people are. And you get their tics, and you don't have to reproduce those tics all the time, but just here and there, because we know he talks like that all the time. And also through dialogue, you really know who a person is. You do. You get the right thing that he says or she says. You got them. You got them as a character. Like my father was, if you asked him You mentioned Texas, and he'd interrupt you, and he'd say, Texas, he'd say, I wouldn't shit in the best part of it. But you know who he is? With that one thing, you know who he is? No, or my mom, I tell her, Mom, I'm always screwing things up. Oh, she says, hijito de mi vida, you are so hard on yourself. That's who she was. Mm-hmm. You say the right things that they say, and then you have them. And you get it, people through conversation and dialogue. And there's a great strength in writing in the first person because young adult novels demand it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't write in the first person ever until I wrote young adult novels. I never wrote in the first person. And it was hard for me at first. And, you know, I'm looking back at, and yet it took something away from my writing as well, because I was looking back at one of my adult novels. Mm-hmm. And it was so, I thought, wow, I wrote this. And it was really good. I've lost something in writing young adult novels, and I've lost something that the formality of writing sometimes is quite beautiful. When you're writing in omniscient or not in first person, third person. And
you started with poetry, right?
Yes, I did.
And the structure and form of it carries through into your novels.
But there's a thing that when you write in the first person in poetry, it's not really you. You create a voice. Mm-hmm. That's the I. It's not me. That resembles me.
Yeah.
But it's more formal, and you create this I that's close to you but not you. A fictionalized you that's more that's smarter and better than you are and more virtuous.
The poet's ego at work. I love it. But when you talk about your novels like Aristotle and Dante and your young adult novels, is that I more you than your poet persona?
No. You know, I try to get into Aries, that I that I use, into Aries' voice. So it's I, Aries. And I'm like him in many ways. Was like him. Mm-hmm. And still am like him. I mean, we change and we don't. It's interesting. I mean, if you're, it's hard to change completely when you're a man. But you do remember. And it's really interesting to me that what we remember when we're adults, and the older you get, you never forget high school for some reason. You know, for the good or for the bad. Mm. You know, you remember just those people that you grew up with because then you saw them as people. When you're a kid, I don't know what you see. You see a little friend or something. I don't know what you see. But you see them as people, and you recognize them as important to you. And you remember them and their characters. That I remember them all. I have friends from high school. I still have friends from high school. I don't have many friends from college. I have like from college, and we're really close. But that's it. But in high school, you know, I went to everything with those kids, you know, like confession to church. We do this, we do everything. And it was great. And I remember them. And I remember that they were so funny. But it's so clear, those memories. And I don't know why it is, but I think that's why, you know, why writers can write about their high school years, because they really remember them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why that is. That's weird. I wish I didn't, actually. They weren't so funny. They weren't really so great.
I could stand to forget a few years of my high school experience, you know.
People call me people face, because I had a lot of zits.
Oh, God.
And then I had on my back, and they would hit me on the back, and it would bleed, and they thought it was really funny. I thought, oh, I love these people.
Yeah, looking back, it's like, oh, wow, that was great. let's talk about you a little bit. You came out, this is a queer podcast, you came out later in life.
Yeah, I did.
Would you like to talk about that? Could you talk about that with us? Because
when I was a boy, mm-hmm. I was abused. Mm-hmm. It's not that I don't remember that happening. I always did remember that happening. But I it really it wasn't like a secret. I was protecting someone, and it would have killed my mother, and so it was, you know, it's funny how little kids protect people they love. And they're just kids. They need to protect you. But when I grew up, I don't want to think about sex. I didn't want to think of myself as a sexual being, or didn't like to think of that had a body.
Sure.
And I didn't. And so I became a Catholic priest, and I didn't have to think about that I had a body, but of course I had to. Eventually, we all live in bodies. Mm-hmm. You can't run forever. And that's not the only reason that I went to the priesthood. I had other perfectly sincere reasons as well. But nothing is completely pure. Any decision we make about anything is ever pure. Mm-hmm. We don't just get married because we love them. There's also pressures to get married and, you know, like all the other things. Yeah. But I didn't want a man to touch me. I thought that was repulsive to me. And it was very difficult for me to get past that. And finally, I did. It's a very long story. It is a long story. But and when I could let myself do that with a lot of therapy and stuff, it was great. But it wasn't great for a long time. And I found it really difficult to trust men. And I trust women a lot more. I still trust women a lot more. I have a lot more women friends than men friends.
Yeah, I get that.
And there's a reason for that, of course. But also, women are nicer people on the whole as men. On the whole, not in every instance. But I have a lot of good, very intimate male friends as well. You know, I have a hard time with gay relationships. I had a hard time with it in my life. But that doesn't mean that I haven't really embraced my sexuality, because I have. And, I'm kind of like those shallow men that would rather, I don't want a relationship with a man. I just want to have sex.
Right. Yeah.
That sounds shallow, but everything's complicated. But I do have embraced my sexuality and I like myself. I like being gay. I wouldn't want to be straight now. I wouldn't, you know, not that I have a choice, but. Yeah, but now that I've gone through all that journey and embraced myself, I don't want to just say, I would be straight. No, I wouldn't. And besides, those straight people are busy fucking up the world. And I'm, you know, like, and I think my journey has made me a writer, and it's made me thoughtful, and it's made me realize that we can choose the kind of men we want to be.
Yeah.
That's the great thing about being gay, because you're not going to be like other men. You know that. And you say, well, what kind of man do I want to be? And I took the opportunity to say that I want to be a kind man. I want to be a good man. I want to be a generous man. I want to be patient. And those are virtues that are hard. You have to nurture them. They're hard. It's hard. It's hard to be a good person, because you have to nurture those values. And it's not always easy. But it's worth it. It really is worth it, because you become the kind of person you want to be. And you can be proud of yourself. You say, yeah, I didn't just step out in the world and be whatever. Laissez-faire.
Do you think that becoming who you wanted to be, or becoming coming out essentially, made you a better person in the long run, coming to terms with yourself?
Yeah, because it made me realize that being vulnerable is a great strength. It really is. People are respond to that, to vulnerability, and it's great. I have a lot of good friends, because I don't know how to make small talk. And I'm not interested in it either. So I think my encounters with people, even if it's people I don't know, are more authentic. Mm. You know, and if you can do everything, it doesn't have to be an important thing, but with authenticity. You can walk the dog with authenticity. You know, it's a good thing. And you can do things and they can be sincere, and your attitude towards them. And it's really, I learned how to be alone. I learned how to face myself and look at myself in the mirror. I learned how to embrace my own faults. I've learned how to be alone and enjoy my own company. Mm. And all the things I love to do are solitary endeavors. I love to run. I was a runner when I was younger until I was about 45. I ran 5 miles a day. That's a pretty solitary endeavor. I like to read, a solitary endeavor. I love to write, a solitary endeavor. I love to paint, solitary endeavor. I like to photograph, solitary endeavor. Nothing that I did was a group thing. And yet I'm really outgoing. But I get my strength from, like an introvert, from being alone. And being alone, I realized that I don't feel alone. I'm not lonely. You know, so you should find a guy. And I said, what for? I can buy my own goddamn flowers. I don't have a reason right now to have anybody in my life, because I have a lot of people in my life.
Yeah.
You know, and why is an intimate relationship more real than an intimate relationship you have with an old friend that you've known for 40 years?
So you were in the priesthood, you mentioned. You studied theology. What's your relationship with God right now? What's going on there?
Well, it's sort of, he infuriates me, you know. And sometimes we don't talk to each other, but it's his fault. You know, he always has, mm-hmm. he knows everything. He always has to be right.
Absolutely, yeah.
No, I'm a spiritual person. And my tradition is Catholicism, but I don't really refer to God. I talk about the universe. I think the universe of putting you in my path. And I believe in the universe and that we all belong to each other somehow in this big universe. And that we are energy. And once energy comes into the universe, it never leaves the universe. When I die, my energy will become something else. And I believe that that we do belong to each other, that we're meant to be connected, and that we are connected even, and we have to express that connection, even if it's in a negative way. When you hit someone, there's a connection there. It's not good, but it's a connection. We are all connected, and we need to make that connection a good one and realize that we do. It sounds so damn cliche, but we do belong to each other. And I really believe that if we thought about this, that all, like, I'm a gay man, I don't have any children, but I believe that all the children of the world belong to me because I'm an adult and I'm responsible for future generations. So I'm responsible to the children of the world and because they belong to me, and not just American kids either, just children. And if we thought that way, the world would be a better place because it's our job to care for them. James Baldwin once wrote in a talk to school teachers, he says, when we educate a child, we educate the child to something, from something to something. And he also said, children of the Third Reich, when educated to the purposes of the Third Reich, became barbarians. Mm-hmm. Now, it's our responsibility. My responsibility is to love and be responsible to the young people of the world. And that's not difficult for me. I like young people. But it's also my job. I'm an adult. I've learned things. I owe them something. To give them something of me, to give them hope when the world endeavors to take their hope away. And I want to give it back to them and say, don't lose your hope, because if you lose your hope, we are all lost. And don't lose your sense of your own beauty, because if you don't understand your own beauty and embrace it, then you're losing something in the living of your life. And because we're so concerned with our relationships sometimes that we forget the most important relationship we have is with ourselves. We're with each other 24/7, ourselves. And we have to have a healthy relationship, not a selfish one, but a healthy one. And I think only then can we learn to be generous and to give. We live in such a sad world, I believe. And it doesn't have to be sad. There's so much joy in us. There's so much, you know, life in us. And I have a little Yorkie, and I love this little dog. And this God reminds me of God's creature. I believe in God because this little dog, you know, is so incredible.
So do you feel like that responsibility to kids that you feel is the reason you started writing children's books, not just the young adult novels, but like Perfect Season for Dreaming?
Yeah, I do. And I think, you know, they're the best audience, little kids. I'm the best audience. Worst audiences are when you read poets to pretentious adults. Universities, it's like, oh, okay. But, you know, little kids are just respond to you. And they respond to you and your voice and your tone and their present. And it's incredible. You know, I read sometimes, Perfect Season for Dreaming, I read it to a group of high school students. And when I finished that story, you'd hear a pin drop. They were really into it. And it was beautiful because we are all children and we all like to be read to. Mm. And they didn't feel condescended to either. And it was a lovely experience. And I'd never done that before. And I want to do it again because I think that, you know, when we listen to people, talking to my students, they don't listen. That's why they can't write a dialogue. They don't listen to what, they listen to what you're saying sometimes, but they don't listen to what you're feeling. And that's what matters. That's what matters. When someone tells you something, why don't they say it and who are they feeling about it? And that's important because that's what you remember. That's how you feel close to them, because you feel you tapped into their emotional life and you heard them. And I think that sometimes we listen just to literal things instead of what's behind it. And it's a terribly important thing. And so it's difficult to become a good listener, but you can train yourself to do that because, you know, you care about what people feel. And if someone says, I hate you, they're not telling you they hate you. You know, they're telling you, I love you and I'm so frustrated with you or I'm angry with you. But they're not saying I hate you. But if that's what we hear, we're going to come back in an argument. Well, you told me you hated me. Mm-hmm. You weren't listening to what I was saying. And I think that we don't listen to our young people. That's what I think. I think we don't listen to them at all. Mm-hmm. Adults have their own agendas about everything. About everything, their politics or whatever. And so they don't listen. You know, and I think kids respond to Aristotle and Dante because when they read that book, they felt that the author has listened to young people and what they go through. They always ask me, how do you know that? That this is what we don't know ourselves, this is what we go through. They respond to it, not just gay kids, but kids in general. Mm-hmm. Just they love this book. They say, God, we're so lost. And how did you know? And you captured that voice. And we felt that you understand us. And that's a lovely thing that they say that to me. And I'm glad that when I read that book, they felt heard and seen, because we need to hear them and see them. And I have a godson, and he's now 20. But when I used to, in high school, I used to take him out for coffee, and him and his sister. And then his mother said, I talked to Kiko, and he said about your lunch. He says, we like men because he doesn't treat us like kids. He says, he treats us like adults. And he says, and adults treat us like kids, and we hate that.
You seem like someone who, you've said this, you have to be a good listener. You seem like someone who never lost that sort of spark of youth and what it is to feel that loss. Do you think that helps you listen to teenagers and kids like that and your students?
You know, I'm 68, and I've some younger friends. They go, you don't seem like you're 68. And I said, if you look at me, I'm 68. Yeah, they go, yeah, but you know, when you're around sometimes I am, you know, the oldest person in the room, but I'm really the youngest person in the room. Lots of times. I always thought that when I was teaching, I thought, oh God, they respond to something. So, wake up. Come on, you guys. You know, like, you're asleep at the wheel. What are you doing? What are you thinking? And I think I never have lost my sense of, no, I love life. I mean, I have always been in love, even as painful as my life has been in many ways. Mm. I always loved life. And I just, it's an incredible gift. And no matter what, you know, there's always a good reason to wake up in the morning. You're alive. You want to put your feet on the ground and commit yourself to the day. You know, maybe your dog ran away and your boyfriend fell in love with someone else. But yeah, that's okay. You're alive. And not anymore. I don't have time to dwell on. I never have been the kind of person that holds a grudge or gets in a bad mood all day when something bad happens in the morning. I'm not in a bad mood all day. Forget about it. And don't let something bad steal my days. And because I always have believed that life is a beautiful thing, and I always have believed. My mom, when she told me when I was 15, two things you need to do in life. You need to learn to be happy, and you need to learn to forgive other people. At the time, I thought to myself, I was 15, no pressure, mom, no pressure. Be happy and forgive other people. But, you know, it makes sense, because you can't be happy if you don't forgive other people. Mm. You can't be, because you carry it around all day. You become this... You know, I really don't like seeing old people or people my age and older, and they're so resentful and bitter. And you think, like, you should be at this age, you should be, God, you've lived this life. It's been so great. And, you know, it's you should be happy that you've been given this opportunity to to be on this planet for just even if it's a short time, it should be. And they're not. And I'm thinking like, shit. Wow, I think that's so sad.
Well, unfortunately, our time together has come to an end. And I've got to do the part of the show where I talk about your website, which is BenjaminScience.com. Thank you so much for being here. Just a total delight. Do you have any last words for our listeners at home?
No, just like, you know, I think people should remember this, that love is something that we do every day, if you think about it. So keep loving and keep living. I mean, it is something we do every day. And if we thought about it, we think better of ourselves. We're better people than we think.
Well, thank you so much. That you brightened up my day for sure. And back to the show.
You want to talk about Can-Can?
Yeah, we can talk about Can-Can. What'd you think? House of Hearts, new show. They were just voted best theater in Seattle.
Yeah, I loved it. As now a veteran to Can-Can, because I've been to another show before this. It was fun. I kind of knew what I had to expect going into it. And I don't know if I would describe myself as a prude, per se, but it was just there on the brink where, like, any more nudity and I might have been a little uncomfortable because that's that Catholic guilt in me. But it was super fun. The dancers are amazing. They can do things that scare me a little bit, that make me wish that I was in better physical shape. And everybody is gorgeous. The story was really cute. I love how the stories at Can-Can, they're always, I don't want to say childlike because everybody's naked and it's very sexual, but they're whimsical, they're fun, they're not too deep, and yet you go away with a sense of empowerment and feeling changed a little bit. So that was fun.
That was, I really liked that about their last show, Hitchcock Hotel.
Yes.
I loved Hitchcock Hotel. And Johnny on stage, this innocence and wonder of his characters is always a delight, even when he is playing someone that's maybe a little bit more lascivious like he did in Lola. I really genuinely enjoy those shows. And if you guys want to learn more about Can-Can, we actually had an interview with one of their dancers. Richard Peacock was on the show last season. It's a fun, fun interview. We talk about Can-Can. We talk about his other project, Euseffinum. Just a delight. And what I love about this place also is like the performers, Johnny and Shadow, are also like co-owners, and they write the shows and they like build everything. That thing where he spins around really fast, like, he built that. And he had to make sure that he wasn't going to die when he built that. Go check it out. House of Hearts, for sure. Yeah. Just go see it.
The menu is spectacular. You've got to try the croissant beignets. They are fluffy. They are flaky. I ordered 2 rounds of them.
They do come highly recommended by some very picky people. Yes.
Yes.
Absolutely.
It was really good.
Let's talk about the Seattle City Council, because this is actually important to us. Shama Sawant's leaving, and she's going to be working on Workers' Strike Back, which is big. Alex Peterson is currently my representative. I've met him a handful of times outside of work, just talking to the guy, and at my last job, I kind of was living and working in the heart of the neighborhood, so it was like a whole thing. There's a picture of me. I had shaved my head because I was having a rough time mentally, but it's me shaking hands with Alex Peterson. I look like a survivor of some Soviet gulag. Poor guy. It's somewhere on the internet. You can look it up. This is before I was doing this job. I was just writing at Eastlake News, the quarterly, and working at Lake Union Mail, which, yeah, what a strange thing. Big, big changes for District 3. So Sawant's been on the council since 2013. She's gotten a lot of flack. You've seen her speak more than I have. I agree with her socialist and progressive policies. How do you feel about this?
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of sad. I really am a big fan of Shama. I was not too involved. I've only been living in Seattle for less than 2 years now, and she was the first name I saw because I live in a part of Capitol Hill that is very wealth divided. You walk about 3 blocks to the right, and there were all of these vote Shama out of city council posters, mm-hmm. all of these rich people that hated her. And then you go 2 blocks to the left, and it's, you know, vote to retain Shama. And I voted. I was really impressed that she had such a tough spirit when it came to this, that people were just constantly coming for her just because of her ideas. It definitely seemed, not to throw a right-wing dog whistle, but it seemed kind of like a witch hunt. And it's really disheartening to me. I was very involved with politics in Eastern Washington and Spokane before I moved over here. And we had a similar council member who had more socialist ideals, was very hated by older people, by the rich mm-hmm. people. And the same person in the last year has quit city council and decided to leave the country, actually. But it's kind of scary to see these people that you look up to and that you think are making a difference and being the change makers, and then see that it takes its toll on them. And we need more people with the same ideology as Shama ready to take up the seat once she can't hold it down anymore.
Yeah, jumping back to sort of my district, which is historically more conservative, but our neighborhoods bump up. And so there's a lot of wealthier folks in my neighborhood as well that voted in Alex Peterson. Now he's stepping down because he's, quote, not a career politician. He said he was a voice of reason. I didn't agree with most of his policies. And the thing is also, Eastlake has its own community council, and local politics here are, like, really intense because it's a bunch of older people that don't have anything else to do but get upset about buses. There's one bus route in my neighborhood.
You can't expect rich people to understand how the bus route works.
Yeah, I was very involved in local politics for the first, like, 3 or 4 years of me being in Seattle, but just in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
Because everyone was so up in arms. We're going to see some major shakeups in Seattle City Council, and I'm really curious to see how that affects, I mean, the two districts that I care the most about, but just the city in general. Especially because, remember when we voted to defund the police? That didn't happen.
What? Really? No way.
And with maybe the most leftist person on the council departing, having not done that, despite some minor victories and major victories over the years, it'll be interesting to see what happens in light of Tyree Nichols' murder and the Tortuguita murder, mm-hmm. both at the hands of police. We don't have to talk about George Santos.
Okay.
But George Santos, I saw a video the other day that was,
are you talking about his twink?
No, I'm not. This is separate. This is new. Oh, he's got this wonderful, very sassy aide, which has just stolen the hearts and minds of comedians and journalists alike. But my favorite new video of George Santos is someone coming up and saying, Mr. Santos, who do you think is going to win this season of Drag Race? And his face, priceless. Oh my God, it's so good. I don't know what his leanings are. I don't know if he's a gay man. I don't know. I don't have all the facts. But the eye roll was maybe the queerest thing I've ever seen in my life. It was so good. And genuinely, I hope that everything about him is true and that we have, even if it destroys his career, we finally have someone with enough sass in government to look up to. Right-wing bullshit aside, of course. Let's talk Pope news.
Yes, Pope news.
Pope Francis said being homosexual isn't a crime. Good, great.
But it is a sin.
It's a sin. So are most things at this point, right?
Like, yeah. I think it's a big step forward for him to say this, and that's not just me backing the Pope as an ex-Catholic, but the Catholic Church views a lot of things as a sin that they say, you know, shouldn't be a crime, like divorce, like sex outside of marriage. And so if being gay gets put in that same category as sex outside of marriage, then it becomes something that, yeah, everybody does, everybody's okay with. It's fine. It's chill. We're just not going to talk about it all the time, I guess. But it's not as awful as the way that conservatives have equated historically homosexuality to something like rape or incest.
I feel like this isn't anything new from Pope Francis. He's been saying this since I was in high school, right? When he was elected Pope, which is such a weird thing that happens. Like, doesn't God, like, it's like God chooses the Pope through this representative system. The papal see blows my mind. The fact that there's just a guy out there that's like, yep, this is what God's saying, and like nobody listens to him most of the time because they're like, ugh, Catholics. Hilarious. His big quote from here is, "We are all children of God, and God loves us as we are, and for the strength that each of us fights for our dignity." What does that mean? Ask your dad. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about God recently, just because that's my usual sort of thing. But, you know, I kind of view personally God as the universe and sort of all of us being made up of the universe. I was thinking about this. I guess we're running out of time here. I'll leave you guys with this. But sentience is sort of just the universe talking to itself. So you and I having this conversation is the universe trying to understand itself better, which is very funny to me because of the constant misunderstandings in day-to-day life between people, between strangers, between friends, and between enemies. Just the universe talking to itself constantly and misunderstanding what it's saying is very funny to me because I do the same thing in my own apartment, puttering around, washing dishes, and being like, oh, you bastard, why would you do this? Like, I do this a lot because my dishes have been sitting in the sink for like a week. I'm like, I would do this to me, wouldn't I? And I like to imagine that the universe has the same conversations with itself through us and all other sentient life that may or may not exist. And I find it very amusing that that is the case. I find it really funny that God could just be some asshole puttering around their apartment and complaining to himself about the dishes that need to get done. Anyway, that's our show. Lindsay, is there anything that you'd like to plug before we head out?
Yeah, follow me on Letterboxd. Follow the SGN on TikTok. We've had a couple TikToks blow up pretty recently. That's been super fun. If you want more George Santos, follow us on TikTok. We've got the content ready.
That's at Seattle Gay News _, because the owner of at Seattle Gay News got drunk one night and wanted her girlfriend to be jealous. And I met her in person and she apologized and we can't switch accounts. She can't remember the password.
Yep.
Follow us on Instagram at radio.sgn, at Seattle Gay News. We're trying to get more active on Twitter. I've been in talks with someone to sort of boost that social media presence. And big news in the world of the podcast network. We may be adding another one soon without adding too much more work to my plate because I'm tired. Well, folks, stay strong, stay informed. We'll see you next week, and we'll see you in the funny pages.